You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. He's speaking to us from Vancouver. Merry Christmas, Bob.
Yeah, and all the best of the season to you. Now, I recall dimly from way back somebody saying that back in the early 1950s, there was a sort of a movement, and it was called the Beatniks. And these preceded the hippies by a long shot. But anyways, the Beatniks were very cool, and their seasonal greeting was, have a cool Yule and a frantic first. So there we are. This is our greeting for this week.
Well, I like George on the Seinfeld show, where they had Festivus, where they would gather around the aluminum pole and exchange grievances.
I didn't see that one, but it would be amusing. Yeah.
Now, a friend of mine, she actually would, with the group, it was called the Vancouver Mixers. It was a combination of business and showbiz people. And so she would have Festivus, and people would dress up in weird semi-festive costumes and gather around an aluminum pole with some tin foil around it and and exchange drinks and then pull up, what's your grievance?
I'd not heard that, Jim. That's a good one.
Well, now we do have a question from our friend David. And we'll just get to that question here in a second.
Well, my computer went black, so.
Oh, well, yeah. So you're having the same problems as me.
And it takes me a whole routine to get it back to life again, so.
Okay. Now from David. I wish you the very best this holiday season. I have a question for Bob. As you know, platinum has gone parabolic in the past month. It seems that investors are now fighting to get into the metal. I know you mentioned it, that in a post-bubble contraction, platinum does not have a history of doing well. In your opinion, is the current price action in platinum more about investors trying to match the price action in gold, or are investors just buying the hyperinflation narrative? Thank you in advance. From David.
Yeah, thanks. And, you know, it's the latter. They're onto the hyperinflation story, and an item gets hot, and then they just bid it up. And also, we're getting that with silver. And silver's on just, you know, heading towards straight up. But it might have yet some more to it. It has really got a life of its own, and so we'll just, you know, monitor these things. We were thinking that the boom. Well, here's the way to put it, Jim. In a great financial bubble, everything gets bubbled, and then everything gets too hot and too strong, but it can always go a little further than you expect. And then when it does change, and we're not certain yet ahead of time when that's going to be, but when it does change, then everything comes down. Everything was bubbled on the way up, and everything gets hit on the way down. And after that, then you go into a lengthy period of bad stock markets. The business cycle continues, you know, 3 or 4 year business cycle, but the recessions are bleak, and whatever the recoveries are, they're kind of weak. So and it's a long period with poor commodity prices. Now, this is the oddball thing with it all, is that gold does very well. We took the you know, through about 150 years of British history, when London was the financial market and the Bank of England was the senior bank, they were convertible. You know, sterling pound convertible into a fixed amount of gold. So, but even through that, gold tells a story. You deflate it by the CPI, the Consumer Price Index, or as we did for later periods, deflate it by the CRB Commodity Index. And so anyways, the pattern has been that in the final year of a great bubble, the real price of gold can go down a little. And then once the bubble is really over, then gold starts a long and positive bull market. And positive, I mean, it's very positive for the gold miners. Because the way it works with the price of things falling relative to gold, that's what we mean with the gold real price. And then it's clear when you talk about gold divided by the commodity index, assuming that the CRB is a reasonable reflection of mining costs. So who cares what the dollar price of gold is, which is what all the gold bugs and all the pundits get off to, is the dollar price. And what we look at is the price relative to commodities. And as I said, we assume that the commodity index is a proxy for costs. And so that's the key thing. When the bullion price is rising relative to costs, the miners are making money. And this is the way Mother Nature's been running it for hundreds of years, is that all of the paper credit bubble mania, which we're in now, when it fails, it's a massive loss of liquidity. But then Mother Nature works it that she, underneath it all, she's increasing the supply of gold, and that is beginning to improve basic liquidities. And despite what the central bankers and interventionist economists say, gold is a real part of the financial equation. And then we'll dwell a little on silver. And now what silver does is surprises the supply-demand guys. They keep track of every ounce of supply of gold and virtually, you know, consumption of silver annually. And yes, they know, some of them know within 1,000 ounces where all of the silver is. And they always identify that it's in short supply. There's more consumed than mined. Agreed. And therefore, that's going to move silver up every year. But that's not the case, because there's something that they don't or want to ignore, I guess, is that silver has a very important financial component to it. And one of those things is that if silver's strong now, acting very well, and it may go further, but when it cracks then and breaks down, that would be signaling a start of the next overall bear market for stocks and bonds and that sort of stuff. But we're not there yet. And we'll watch and see how it goes. We thought things would be okay through into the first quarter. And in some departments, they're way more than okay, but it's fine with us.
So in this case, instead of Dr. Copper, it's Dr. Silver.
I like that, Jim. You have crafted a very good line.
Mm-hmm. Now, my question is, Bob, have we seen a similar unprecedented rise in gold and silver before? I mean,
well, as I say, Jimmy, we've had a long and wonderful bull market for gold in the senior currency terms. It's exceptional because the only thing that compares to it is the problems of the Napoleonic period, 1819, it's in there somewhere. England went off of gold. Prior to that, 1797, they went off of gold, and they went back on in 1820. So you do have a brief period of time when the senior country and the senior currency were not convertible. But at any rate, our conclusions are is that the party is on, and when the party breaks, it'll be important. And I think silver could be one of the items that gives us a heads-up warning. So, yeah.
Now, what's going on with Bitcoin? At this time last year, Bitcoin was worth roughly $94,000. Right now, it's about $7,000 less than that. Does Bitcoin remind you of tulip mania?
Yeah, tulips, 1637. And Holland was the senior economy. Antwerp was the market. And I've got a book here on tulips. Hmm. And some people got speculating in tulip bulbs, and there were certain colors that were very valuable. But you had the bulbs, and you didn't know what color they would turn out to be. And it was in the hands of financially inexperienced public. And indeed, the authorities at the time did point out that this market was outside of their boundaries, and therefore, take care. You're on your own risk. And it ran, and it got burned out, and then the tulips crashed, and it did hit the financial markets, because there was a lot of people, small people's assets destroyed on the tulip crash. So, tulips was a great one, example of people just going crazy about, and at the moment, a hot item. Now, what you have with this Bitcoin stuff is it is a high technology speculation. A previous high technology speculation culminated in 1929 with Radio Corp of America, RCA. That was the big darling. And it went up to maybe $125 and then all the way down to $1.25 in that order. But it's interesting because in our notes here, the street in 1929 for RCA was expecting $3 a share earnings. So that was factored into the market. And then it crashed and the earnings went to zero, maybe even up losses. But the stock earnings eventually got back up to $3. And guess what was driving it? The Elvis Presley contract in 1956-57 was making huge money for RCA. Now, if you had bought RCA hot in 1929 for $3 a share, it took you all that time to break even or to get back to $3 a share, And I don't think the price of the stock, maybe it took until the mid-50s, maybe about that time when the price of the stock exceeded the price reached in 1929. So when you're in a financial mania, people extrapolate the good times forever, and then they go away, sadly.
Who's going to be the Elvis for Bitcoin?
I don't know. But, of course, in the first bubble of 1720, the stock promoters, everything, they had a new deal, new way of making canvas for ships. And then one promoter was, this deal is, this new item is so good that we can't tell you anything about it until you put your money in.
Ah, yes.
Right.
We'll take a look at some of the stories and headlines that caught your eye right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Bob Hoy. A headline from Canada Free Press, King Cole is far from dead.
Oh, yeah. The crazy control freaks hate hydrocarbons. That means crude oil, natural gas, and coal. Hmm. Now, recently built, you know, last 20 years or so, coal electrical generating plants in the U.S. and Canada have been very clean of environmental problems and issuance and stuff like that. And I think the way you read the headlines in China, they're building and starting up a new coal plant every other week or something like that. Anyways, the number of coal-fired electrical generation being developed in China is absolutely mind-boggling, and I, as someone who's concerned for the environment, I don't worry. They've got scrubbers and all that sort of stuff. But then, a lot of the hysteria these days is caused by a fear of carbon dioxide in the air, and we breathe it out at above 5% and take it in at 0.004, whatever it is. And now here's the other part on this crazy environment, climate stuff, is that for roughly a billion years, when life first appeared on Earth, warming conditions were good. And maybe about 500 million years ago, the Earth went into a real cold period. Let's call it slush ball Earth. And these days, if you go to a glacier and lift it up, what kind of life forms you got under it? Well, anyways, the whole world was a slush ball, so the life was very poor then. So they don't accept that warming is good. And the other thing is they have a real problem with the artifice of declaring that CO2 is bad. And without CO2, life as we know it on Earth for trees, plants, everything, amoeba even, and people and horses and cows, it would not live. So this business about using a trace gas in the atmosphere, CO2, as a means to control society has more to do with the control freaks than it does with the influence of CO2 in the atmosphere.
Yes, a friend of the show, Michael Rivero, also points out what we should be worried about if you want global warming is water vapor, because it retains heat 10 times more than CO2 does.
Oh, yeah. I have a nice little illustration on that one. Let's say we're in a desert in North Africa or even in Death Valley in the United States. Now, during the daytime, let's say maybe October, November, the air temperature can go up to about 90 degrees Fahrenheit. And it feels pretty warm. And then at nighttime, with the huge radiant loss of heat, it can go right down to freezing. So then, and that, of course, is that there's no humidity. It's bone dry. Whereas if you move at the same latitude into a tropical, what we call a tropical jungle area, the CO2, of course, will be the same. But with the high humidity, the sun goes down, but the temperature doesn't go down if you're in one of those steaming jungles, you know. So right then and there is a very good illustration that the key in some instances is water vapor in the air, and it hugely overwhelms the story about the evils of CO2. Right, I just condemn it all to hell. So,
another headline that caught your eye: Canadian city councillor admits electric buses are a bust.
Buses are a bust. That's. I think, Jim, that was up in Edmonton. And in a very cold climate, city insisted in, I don't know, maybe $8 or $9 million per bus. And they only run for an hour and a half each day on a cold day. So that means you still have to have a fleet of diesel-operated buses. The city council sometimes can be pretty weird.
Right. Well, electric buses use batteries that cannot retain as much charge in very cold weather as they can when it's warm out.
That's right. It's chemistry.
Yeah.
And that's the problem with the cells in the special batteries. Is that they contain all the oxygen that's needed for the process, whereas in an ordinary car, once you burn up all the fuel, hey, that's it. But with these high-tech batteries, once they get going, they can take hours to put out, and water just makes it worse. They got special big blankets they can put all on them, but then they can haul the wreck of a Tesla off to a wrecking shop yard and park it away, and then maybe 2 days later it'll self-ignite again. So the electric cars are very, very dangerous.
Well, maybe they should just park the buses near some burning Teslas. Warm them up overnight.
Oh dear, Jim, you're evil.
Just practical.
Yes.
Yeah, don't waste that burning Tesla. Take it down to the transit bus park.
And keep the buses warm.
Keep
sure.
The home fires burning. Didn't they say that during the war? Today, keep your Tesla burning. It'll save a bus.
Yeah.
Bob, oh yeah, we're so silly. Is anything here that you think we have to keep an eye in or eye on going into Christmas?
Oh, this is a powerful move in a number of items, and you just let them run. We had thought things could be okay into the first quarter, and we'll leave it at that. Watching for, let's call them super excesses. And silver is straight up, but it could do another leg even further straight up. But we don't know until we get there. So that's the first quarter.
All the best, Bob.
All the best, yeah. And to our listeners out there in Etherland, have a really good Christmas.
My guest has been market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. If you have any questions for Bob, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at House Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.